Welcome to Chronic Combat Conversation, a live look at our best bets, picks, and predictions with your hosts, TV Scouting MMA and
the MMA Guru, back once again for UFC Vegas 30, UFC Fight Night 190, and UFC on ESPN Plus 48, Gon versus Volkov, a heavyweight main event with a heavyweight co-main event. I mean, this is a damn good card. Honestly, last week's was a sleeper card, like really good. So it'll be interesting to see if this card can live up to even last week's card, especially with the next card looming, UFC 264. Yeah, really, really exciting. But we have a special guest in the building today, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, man, I hope you guys are ready.
Our original inaugural guest, he's a winner. He makes bank.
Big draft money. Wins.
UFC is his game. The UFC Shark, welcome back, buddy. Thanks for joining us.
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me back. Appreciate it.
Happy to have you, man.
Thanks, man. That's it. I got to win this card now. Live up to that intro.
Yeah, man. Listen, well, you know, it's a tough business to be a part of, but you know, you seem that you do make it look easy at times. We know it's not easy, so that's why we put the work in.
Yeah, for sure. Last week's card was really good. Last week's card was actually came pretty easy for me, and I know you guys did well too.
Oh yeah,
you know, we spoke and we all agreed on Zombie. That was great. That was a good win. I saw everyone was on Ige. I mean, I don't know anyone that was on Zombie, but us three.
That line ballooned up at closing. Zombie was plus 130 right before the fight started. I mean, it was on DraftKings and FanDuel. I mean, it was egregious.
You know, I noticed a pattern when that happens. You take the fighter who is becoming more the dog.
I was going to say it's generally late public money that comes in, I feel like. So that late public money, like people, that's the last second. Your friend told your friend told your friend to bet Ige. So now everybody's betting Ige. Like it just kind of spreads and he becomes, you know, the public dog actually. I mean, the public gets it wrong in the fact that they, you know, they have the wrong side. And the line becomes too wide.
For sure. I love fate in the public. I love it.
Hell yeah.
So,
do you need anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, this is great. So happy to have the Shark back on. And why waste any more time? Boys, let's get right down to business. We're gonna kick this card off with a pretty exciting matchup that was actually booked before. We did already spend a little bit of time going over it on a different pod. But Yancy Medeiros versus Demir Hadzovic. This one is probably primed to be a fun fight. I think, you know, we did go over at length, you know, how exciting this matchup would be. But now that we have Shark on, let's focus on the line here for this matchup. Hadzovic at minus 150, Medeiros at plus 120. Pretty classic type of grappler versus striker type of deal in my eyes. And I think we could see an exciting fight.
I was also going to say, for anybody that wanted to go back and listen, that was on the Font Garbrandt card. So we have that breakdown in our Font Garbrandt card. So if you did want to re-listen to us talk about that, you certainly can. But let's keep listening right now.
Hell yeah. So Shark, I mean, is there anything you're seeing in this line for this fight? Because I'm not so sure I had a play on this one.
All right, so not really, but I do think I think this should be closer to a pick'em, in my opinion. You know, when I was doing a little research, I was actually surprised that the Demir's minus 150. I thought that was a little high, you know. To be honest with you, this line system that I follow, I've noticed DraftKings has been switching it up. You know, part of me regrets. I used to, you know, go on my Instagram and talk about it a lot and say, oh, I have this line system movement. And, you know, I've told people about it before and different things like that. And I guess went like public with it. And I don't know if it was just a coincidence, but I've noticed DraftKings has switched it up. A lot of the line movements that used to win now lose. And they've been it's like they've been losing. And I'm like, what? Like, it's weird. I've never seen this lose in a year and a half, 2 years since I've been following it. And all of a sudden it loses. It's you know. So yeah,
definitely fishy.
You know, I just have to focus more because there were times I've only relied on the line. I've just picked off that and I've won off it so constantly. And then lately when I do it, I've been losing from that. So now I just got to be a little more focused and not only just love the line, I have to love the fighter as well. You know, yeah. But I thought this line should be closer, to be honest. And if I had to pick one, I would take Medeiros just because I feel like he's faced higher competition. He's, you know, he's been around, in my opinion, I think he's definitely faced higher competition. What do you guys think about that?
I certainly agree in terms of the higher level of competition. His last three losses being Donald Cowboy Cerrone when he was on a little bit of a tear, Gregor Gillespie, who's a beast, and Lando Venata, who's definitely a shifty, difficult fighter. Can't knock Hadzovic's, it's a chokeout loss in 40 seconds to Renato Moicano. Moicano's, you know, obviously a beast on the ground. But you're right. The level of competition is certainly different. I think when we capped this fight originally, we felt that this is like if Yancy Medeiros loses, this would very well be his last fight. So I think his career is on the line here and with the UFC. I think if I had to make a play, I think I lean under. I think I'm going to go back to kind of leaning on my theory that they're picking a specific fight to be kind of exciting to start the card and in a small cage. Yeah, I think that one of these guys gets the finish. So maybe under 2.5 at +128 or even money just for the fight not to go the distance.
Yeah, that's a pretty solid play. I do think I will sit out on this one. It doesn't scream to me. I didn't really find a side that I was in love with. And like Shark said, I do think it could be lined closer to a pick'em given the experience. So given
that. I agree with all that. Yeah. I mean, so with that being said, do we think that, like, if the line should be closer, does that mean we should be playing the dog?
Because I think it should be closer doesn't mean I think that there's like a surefire side. And usually, like, I want to be sure
just in the fact that we think that there might be value on the dog.
I know. But I want to give you my thought real quick. Is just sure. That sometimes we play value, but we say like, you know, oh, I really don't necessarily think this guy's going to win on like a +120. I got to think like that person's winning, like, and the line is wrong. I just think that the line should be closer. So that's why I'm not like really excited to pull the trigger.
That makes sense. I agree with that.
Yeah. So, I mean,
talk anything to add?
No, I'm just was saying, I'm not going to bet this fight. It's the first fight of the card. It's early. I'll be running around getting settled in. I don't love it. You know, like you guys said, it doesn't scream, you know, anything. It's just, I don't know.
Maybe the Guitar Hero Justin James will scream something to you.
Yeah, so good segue. Here we are moving along to the next fight. Shark hit that mute.
Thanks, bud.
All right. So moving right along to the next fight, like you so mentioned, we got the Guitar Hero, Justin James, but his counterpart, the matchup, Charles Rosa, someone that might have let us down last time, but trying not to let that cloud my vision too much this time. Coming into this matchup, you know, it's real easy to want to say like Rosa has like such a high level jiu-jitsu and everything else like that. I just don't trust that, you know.
We've started learning to not play that black belt game, right? You sent out a sick tweet last week. We're not playing that black belt game anymore.
Yeah.
And that was a prime example of it that we didn't necessarily register. We thought Charles Rosa had, like, we understood Derek Minner, right? Was a purple belt, like a black, like that he was good at submissions, but like, oh, Charles Rosa's black belt, his jiu-jitsu is so good. He got mollywopped with the wrestling. It didn't matter.
Yeah. I mean, and you see that time and time again with
what was it Charles last Rosa. Week? How many different belt situations did we have last week?
Okay, so we had Casey O'Neill was the lower level belt against Lara Procopio. That was something I leaned on in my scouting. Then we had
that led to a mistake. To be clear, yeah, unfortunately,
definitely. Korean Zombie was a brown belt, and Ige was a black belt. Now they're both black belts. Look at that.
Yeah, shout out Korean Zombie earning his black belt. That was awesome.
And then Sergey Spivak. Yeah, we saw him win in a lot of wrestling exchanges against, you know, the ultra black belt Alexei Olenek. So I think it's so easy for us to want to talk about the jiu-jitsu, but we do have to focus on the wrestling. And isn't it so interesting? Justin Janes out of Extreme Couture, I believe he actually does a little bit of the coaching for the wrestling there. High school wrestling, he lost to Jakar Close in the state championship, actually. And he was a 4 years at NC. Yeah, dude, right? And then 4 years of D1 wrestling NCAA. So it's like he's got plenty of experience. Janes, I don't know how great his jiu-jitsu is specifically, but I know he has 5 submissions and only 1 submission loss. And that submission loss was to Gavin Tucker, where he gassed out towards the end in the 3rd round. So I can excuse that, a UFC-level submission loss. It makes sense. And I don't think that, you know, Rosa is necessarily the same type of threat on the feet as Janes is. And, you know, it could get real interesting if, you know, Janes charges forward early. I'm not sure a knockout is necessarily live. You know, Rosa's only been finished once in his career, and that was Shane Burgos in round 3. I don't think Janes necessarily finishes him, but like,
You're playing the dog here?
I might be playing a dog. Justin Janes looked really good in the photo I saw of him next to Charles Rosa, like the best shape I've seen him in the UFC. He's got a full camp this time.
First fight with a full camp?
I think
he took Smith on short notice. Did he take Benitez on short notice?
He's on a full camp, Janes. You're right about that. He's on a full camp.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where
Charles
I think.
Rosa's on a full camp too, so
of course. I mean, you know, he's cooking for himself. So the line, Charles Rosa -177, Justin Janes +140. I think it would be really interesting to see, you know, what type of props are we talking about? Because I'm not so sure I want to play that +140 for a money line for Janes, but like +375 for a decision, just because like Rosa's really difficult to finish. I think it could be interesting if there is some wrestling and some striking.
Sorry to interrupt. And I know that you, Shark, love DraftKings, but FanDuel has Justin Janes by decision at +460. So that's that's major, major line difference that you kind of can't ignore.
Tell me again, what'd you say that prop bet was? Janes by decision, you said?
Yes. +460?
Yeah.
I don't really know, man. I originally was leaning towards Janes. Then I liked Rosa. And to be honest, I really don't know why. You know? But probably because of the experience. Mm-hmm. I just feel like Charles Rosa been in there with better competition, better fighters. He's got better wins, better losses, if that makes sense. You know?
He's lost to better people, but his wins are debatably the same. Actually, I guess not really, because all Janes has beat is Frank Camacho. If he didn't win that Frank Camacho fight, he would not still be in the UFC. He did the UFC a favor by stepping in against Devontae Smith, so they gave him another fight here, maybe even a couple more after this. I don't know what he might have signed another 3 or 4 fight deal or something, but I don't know. This is a stay away fight because you can't really trust either guy. Rosa looked terrible against Derek Minner. If he loses here to Justin Janes, and I mean you lose to Justin Janes, you're at the bottom of the barrel. So no disrespect to Justin Janes, but I mean at 34 for Charles Rosa, this is huge crossroads do or die time. He didn't seem to be in trouble before the Derek Minner fight.
But on a two-fight skid, losing to Justin James, he's got big problems. And Justin James, like I said, he's lost now three fights in a row. He's done the UFC a couple favors. So TB just shared with me right before we came on an Overtime Heroics article where Justin James talked about the fact that he put 25K, pretty much his entire contract, into this fight. And I don't know, that he has a permanent black eye, he feels that he has a permanent black eye that will never heal or something. Like, I don't know what that is, like a hematoma or something. Like, that can't be a good thing, right? Like,
yeah, no, I really don't think so. But realistically, that's why I'm not really rushing to play the shorter plus 140 money line. And I don't have like a heavy pick on this fight, but Rosa's disappointed plenty of times. Yeah, definitely weigh-ins, face-offs. But Rosa's disappointed me enough. James has disappointed everybody plenty, but he's always down for an exciting fight. And like Rosa, I just don't know if he throws hands enough to really hurt James like that. It's more like, does he catch him by submission is really the worry for him. But like, I don't know. I think we fleshed this one out enough.
Go the distance. You know? How about the fight to go the distance plus 114? Nobody gets a finish. But that's what you can. I don't know if you can even trust James. Like, that's so crazy.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I think James probably gets finished if he loses based on the grappling, you know, difference. But like, I think if James wins, it could be a knockout or a decision. So
Rosa by submission is plus 280. Rosa by KO is plus 900.
Yeah, but like, I think that that's fairly reflected, and like, I don't see it happening.
You know, I think the safest play here, in my opinion, if I do some crazy Hail Mary parlay or something, I would take Charles Rosa. It's a good fight for him. What else do you want? Who the fuck else do you want to fight? They're giving you Justin James. Like, you know, you fought a lot of good fighters. Bryce Mitchell went the distance with him. Derek Minner. Derek Minner's not bad, man. He's gotten a lot better. Went in there with a good game plan, you know, when they fought. He fought Shane Burgos, Yair Rodriguez. I mean, now you're getting Justin James. What else do you want? If you can't win, you know, go fight in PFL or something like that.
That's, you know, 100%. It's 100% a crossroads fight. You're 1,000% right.
Justin James is just like a filler, you know, and I don't know. Well, I mean, where's he trained, Justin James? At
Extreme Couture, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that doesn't even mean anything, you know? I mean, I'm sure it's better than
pretty transient, Jim. We've talked about that.
But, you're right. You know, it is what it is. That's why I think the safest place is Charles Rosa, in my opinion. But, like, before you guys were talking about
it. He really might look like a similar fight I think of later, like the Andre Feely fight, not to tip my hand too early. But I think it could be very similar, like the Andre Feely fight, where like Charles Rosa is like just kind of gonna win. Like, it's the better. I don't know if it's a lock of the night kind of thing or whatever. I'm sure both of these guys are gonna lose now. But
you know, Justin James seems tempting plus 140. But before, you know, we were talking, and I always say this, you know, you can't just chase value. You gotta chase the winners. You gotta go for the winners, not the value. Like, oh, this line looks good, and this guy has a chance, but you know, it's good value. I, you know, every time I try
talk to yourself into it,
value, or like when I used to sell picks and I was trying to make these high parlays for the people that might come in because that's what everyone wants, I would lose. And I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? Why am I picking fights I don't even like really love, you know? So I don't know. I'm not taking Justin James just because he's plus 140. And Charles Rosa minus 177, I don't know. I think that line's a little spread out. I think Charles Rosa's minus 177 for a reason. I think Justin James does not belong in the UFC. Charles Rosa's bottom of the barrel, but what else do you want, man? You got Justin James. He should be so happy he has this fight, in my opinion.
I think that's why he's betted all on himself. So I think we're ready to move along to the next fight, which is another rebooked fight after Julia Stoyarenko had that really horrible scene at weigh-ins where she had to, they made her go back up and then she collapsed. It was, that was really awful to see.
Really
and
scary.
And then we have Julia Avila on the other side. TB, Stole your job here a little bit.
That's all good. Yeah, I mean, honestly, if there was going to be one fight I didn't really want to spend too much time breaking down, to be honest with you, it's probably this one. I really didn't have great feelings about it last time. Now it's rebooked. The line's -345, Julia Avila, and +260, Julia Stolyarenko. Is that probably fair? I mean, yeah, probably. I'm not going to go ahead and parlay it with Avila, and I'm not going to try to fade Avila with Stolyarenko. I mean,
yeah.
Props to you if you cash on that, but I mean,
if you listen, do want to hear our previous breakdown of it, that was the first fight on the Brunson Holland breakdown. So obviously not right now, but you could go hear that as well. Yeah, I think like we said before, Avila should have the power on the feet, but she's not as good off her back. And that while Stolyarenko, you know, we kind of maybe think that the UFC expects a decent amount from her because her fight against, you know, they put her against Yana Kuniskaya, and Kuniskaya completely, you know, smothered her, but we know how good her wrestling is. So we'll see. I'm certainly way independent. I don't want to place any sort of money on this. TB. Shark, did you see anything that we don't see on this?
Yeah, I actually like something on this fight. I like Stolyarenko. I think it's going to be an upset. This is one of the upsets on the card. Reason why I like it is because of the line. So I have this system I follow that I was talking about earlier. And I've seen that the dog, when it's at this line, when I've seen it at this line before, it cashes a lot. And I just think it's a good dog. I don't know why the odds are like this so far apart. I feel like that's crazy. Like, I don't know. Am I missing something? What has Julia Avila done?
She shredded Gina Mazzani, but everybody.
Gina Mazzani sucks. She didn't belong in the UFC. I'm sorry. She's a nice person. I've actually put she's a really bet cute. On her, and it came in a parlay, and I won all this money and tagged her in it. And I spoke to her on Instagram. She's cool and nice, but I don't think she's, you know, that's not impressive. That doesn't impress me that she did that. Wow, big deal. You're -345 because you beat, what's her name again? Jillian Robertson? Who'd she beat? Oh, okay. Sorry, I have a bunch of shit going on right now looking at all these different fights. But, yeah. All right, you didn't want to spend a lot of time on this fight. But I think I said before, oh, I don't like chasing value. But, you know, I'm going to say.
You're right. At Clark, what's the line? Like +300 or something?
+260, Stolyarenko. I think she can win. It could be an upset. And I feel like it's worth putting it into a small parlay. Like if you have $100 or $50, whatever type of bettor you are, you know, I think it's worth putting that in some kind of parlay. You know, it's not like it's Amanda Nunes or Valentina Shevchenko fighting, you know, someone. This is winnable. But so I feel like there's value on that for a small, have fun parlay, you know?
All right. I think to your point. Yeah, I do respect that. And I think to your point, there's a certain degree of like variability and like randomness that can just happen in the UFC, especially this. I mean, sports in general, but especially in the UFC. So, yeah, I mean, these are both relatively unproven prospects. So, why not? Why isn't it maybe a little bit closer to a coin flip? It's not like there's a giant mismatch in terms of the matchup, right? Like it's not like she's a terrible striker and she's gonna, but right, there's not like a crazy matchup advantage, right?
I guess to me it's yeah, I think if you are looking at a dog that's +260, it takes a lot less to convince me to play that than it does, like I said earlier, like a +140. So Shark, maybe I'll be looking to weigh in, see if she looks good this time. And I might end up following you. That could be some good advice. So let's get on to the next fight, where I do think someone won a little money on Marcin Prochniak last time out, if I remember correctly. Mr. Shark, is that right?
Yeah, he kept that to himself, though.
Hey, listen, no, I wouldn't want to share with my friends that I'm betting on Marcin Prochniak.
I didn't. I actually took Khalil Roundtree that fight.
Oh, damn.
I did, and you know what? I'm going to tell you something.
Now I feel like a dick.
That fight haunts me till this day because I wasn't going to touch that fight. I said, I'm not touching that fight. And then that I got every fight that I picked and parlayed correct except that one. And I put Khalil Roundtree in almost every parlay. And then in every parlay I didn't put Khalil Roundtree, I put that fight would not go the distance. Okay. Ooh. And I was like, I need one. I just don't need, you know, Morrison to win on points. And I'm good. That's it, you know. And a reason why I put Khalil Roundtree in that and I touched that fight was because I was listening to some fucking YouTube guy. And he was like, Khalil Roundtree, my most confident pick. And then I was like, let me take a peek at that fight. And I started looking and looking. And I'm like, I don't see Khalil Roundtree losing, right? So that really fucked me. And I'm going to tell you something. I would have been over $60,000 richer if Khalil Roundtree won. And you know what? Khalil Roundtree had a fucking chance to finish him in that fight.
So here's my theory on the line and taking lessons from what are we talking about here? Trusting fighters that aren't good and having more than like a minus 200 next to their name. Marcin Prochniak, yeah. minus 215. Ike Villanueva, plus 170. Both of these guys should be plus 170 in this fight, if that was even possible. You know what I mean?
Nobody's going to win.
No, so, okay. Prochniak was like, basically, it was the reverse of this, except Roundtree was like minus 300, and Prochniak was like plus 260, something like that last time out. And Prochniak...
I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah.
Roundtree was minus 400. He was up minus 345 on DraftKings, and I think other places... It was like around that range.
You started ballooning up.
Yeah, no. See, Shark, there you go. See, that's even more so. Okay, so it's not that dramatic a line split. And I get it. Ike Villanueva could lose here. But, like, is there any way I could ever trust minus 215 on Marcin Prochniak? Nope. Okay, no, so if there's anything to do, I mean, all right, let's just dive right into the props here. Prochniak versus Villanueva, you know, Villanueva to win by finish is plus 260 and by knockout is plus 275. So you might as well just take a chance and say, you know what, just in case Villanueva, he would get a sub, something like that. But plus 260, now we're talking. I do think Prochniak, I don't know how great he really is, how good his chin is, or if he really got dropped a couple times and just didn't get finished by someone with the lowest fight IQ. So like Ike Villanueva, 14 knockouts, 3 decision wins. So, like, watch him get his first career sub in this fight or something stupid. So, like, just give up the 15 points. Do it to plus 260 instead of plus 275, like, to cover that crazy stuff.
I think it's
stuff.
Time for Ike Villanueva to go the distance.
Ooh. That's what I think. So, are you just going to play Moneyline?
I think this is a stupid, sloppy fight. I like the fight to maybe listen. Could either one of these idiots hit the deck? For sure. Absolutely. We've seen Marcin hit the deck. It was 3 straight fights before last fight when he went to the decision with Khalil Roundtree. I think this is another one that goes the distance. I don't know why. I'm just getting that feel. Plus 124 to go the distance. I mean, I guess I know why I have that feel because, I mean, Ike's not really going to put it on. He's shown in the UFC that he's not an early finisher. With his finishing ability, if anything, he just kind of gets finished early with that Jordan Wright fight. That was crazy. And then the Chase Sherman fight, he kind of gasses out. But, you know, his last fight against Vincas Moreira, he looked, you know, fairly decent. And Prochniak looked terrible against Roundtree, but was able to hang in there. And Roundtree, again, has one of the lowest fight IQs I've ever seen. And he was able to get escape with a victory and was able to keep his UFC career intact. If it's not a first-round finish, and by first-round finish, I mean like in the first 2-3 minutes, I do think that this fight goes the distance. So, I don't know. I see Ike Villanueva by decision at plus 600, and that's crazy to me. So
even better, I mean, the fight to go the distance is plus 140 on DraftKings. So actually, if you wanted a little more value – you could go there. I mean, that's not the worst idea. To be honest with you, I mean, Ike Villanueva by KO would be the narrative, right? We try to fade the narrative. I think you talked me off the narrative.
Yeah. Either fighter by finish would be the narrative, no? Wasn't Prochniak supposed to be a finisher before he walked into the UFC and became the guy who gets finished?
That's true. Yeah, but you know what? Either stay away or you know, look at one of those props. Taking a side here, probably not going to be the best idea.
Yeah, a couple tough fights to really handicap to start this card. But really, this is again, no disrespect to the card, but these three, four fights here are probably about as low level or so as hard to glean from past fights as possible. Right?
You know what? I see what you're saying. The fight is gonna could go the distance, but I do like the under 2.5 rounds. That's the total rounds on DraftKings, or the fight doesn't go the distance. I mean, the fight doesn't go the distance is -190. I don't think this fight, maybe early third round, it's done in my opinion. You know what? Marcin Prachnio, when he fought Khalil Roundtree, he needed that win. His job was on the line, and he fought a little different. He was very patient. He wasn't just rushing in. You know, he was a little more patient, taking his time. You know,
he still got rocked at the end of that second round. It should have been finished.
I know. But you know what? If I were to bet, I'd take the under 2.5, but I'm probably not going to take it. I really want to win.
Is there something jumping out at you? Or
I like the under 2.5 rounds.
Fair enough.
That's it. I mean, I like Ike Villanueva. When he won his last fight, he was like, oh, I'm just a guy from Houston. I think somewhere in Texas or something like that. I'm a hard worker. I'm, you know, he had his family there. You know, you're like, oh, I like
this. Yeah, he's a good dude.
You know, and then
seems like it anyway.
So I hope Villanueva wins, you know, but I'm probably not going to bet this fight, man.
Good call.
Now on to another fight that's really difficult to bet, honestly. Yeah. Right? Warley Alves and the debuting Jeremiah Wells.
Yeah, I don't know where to go with this one, man. I mean, Warley Alves, I faded the shit out of him last time with Munir Lazez.
With the shark.
And now Warley Alves is -240 against Jeremiah Wells +198. Someone that's probably been knocking on the door for a while, but I mean, he hasn't fought since what, 2019 now?
Shark, did you have something to add about Lazez?
Nah, man, that fight disappointed me, bro. I was disappointed. But Warley Alves, he looked prepared. He looked strong. You know, he looked focused. After the fight, he called out Nate Diaz. You know, I mean, I think he's one of those guys with a lot of talent. It's just kind of like, you know, are you working hard? Are you focused? You know, because what's that saying? Hard work will beat talent when talent doesn't work hard. And yeah. I just think Willie Alves fought really high competition. He's been around the block. And he's younger than Jeremiah Wells. I don't think Jeremiah Wells ever faced competition this high. You know, I like Warley Alves here. I'm gonna put him in a parlay.
Yeah, I was I haven't scouted much of Jeremiah Wells, unfortunately. But the paper scouting I was able to see, you know, he's on the CFFC circuit, which is a premier regional circuit. You know. Not fighting necessarily tomato cans. And it seemed like each time that he could have broken through, you know, needed the signature win, you know, he would have a loss or, you know, then he had a draw. Then he rattled off three wins. And again, maybe looking to get a fourth win and get in, and he takes a loss, gets two finishes in a row, gets three canceled fights, was supposed to fight Miguel Baeza, interestingly enough. And Baeza was not cleared to fight. And now he gets Warley Alves, and you probably have to think that he's been preparing for his UFC debut, but Warley Alves is a crafty veteran, a difficult guy to kind of figure out, a guy that beat Colby Covington back in the day. And maybe you're right. Maybe Warley Alves is one of those plays you just kind of take because he should win. I mean, you could have felt that way about Matt Frivola a couple of weeks ago, right? That McKinney, but we like McKinney. McKinney was a beast.
Yeah, so. I took McKinney. Listen, man, I just get sketched out by this line myself. And that doesn't mean I want to play Wells per se. I do think Alves wins. I just like really get sketched out when the line overcorrects itself, like the Marcin Prochniow fight. Like, you go from being a plus two something to being a minus two something, you know, back to back fights. Like, it's tough for me to trust Alves specifically, but what you guys said definitely makes sense, and he definitely should have the advantages and win this fight. I just think I'm personally, you know, it's a more high variable because we're not 100% sure what Wells looks like against this level of competition. So I'll take it back, take a step back, learn a little bit, see if Wells has anything going forward. And if Alves wins here, I'll be celebrating for you guys cashing a ticket.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to put him in as part of a parlay. Let's do it.
All right. So that's your first leg, right?
Yeah. I was thinking about throwing Charles Rosa in there too, but I'm not going to do that. That's insane. I don't want to. I mean, listen, you guys could throw Charles Rosa in there if you want. It's the same. It's like the same philosophy. I'm going on a specific philosophy for this parlay. So you can include Rosa in there. I don't feel as confident about it. But to start the parlay, Warley Alves.
Okay. Let's get right along then. In our next fight, we have Shavkat Rakhmonov versus Michel Prazeris. And this is definitely one of those matchups where I might normally look to, you know, fade, you know, the young guy coming up 13-0, undefeated. You got Prazeris, the veteran, 26-3. This guy, you know, he's been around the block. Maybe it's going to be a vet lesson. You know, he's got, you know, three submissions, seven decisions. But like, what? What is it?
Who is that guy? The mountain man. That one. After he was suspended and off for 3 or 4 years. What's his name?
Oh, Georges Dano.
Yes. That's what this reminds me of. Because he was suspended for 2 years and he's a little bit older and nobody's expecting him to win. And here he comes.
Nah, definitely, dude. Like, listen, Rakhmonov, like, the thing that really makes me pause about wanting to play Prazeris, because, like, believe me, I mean, it is tempting. You see Prazeris plus 235 and Rakhmonov at minus 305. That line's going to keep getting wider. I don't see why not.
Like, terrible. And then his win against Fabinski was like, he looked roided out to me. I don't know how he didn't pop there, but he looked roided out to me. And Fabinski lunges in and he just clips Fabinski and Fabinski goes flying. I mean, it was a little ridiculous, but we know that Fabinski cannot strike at all. So,
yeah,
not surprising.
And listen, when these guys face up, they match up. It's going to be 6'1" versus 5'6". Shavkat Rakhmonov is going to be huge. He's got a 77-inch reach. Prazeris has a 69.5-inch reach. So, I mean, this guy, he's got 7 inches of height, 7 inches of reach. I mean, Rakhmonov should win this fight. I just don't trust
Shark him. Something to add?
Yeah. All right. The only way I see Rakhmonov losing is him gassing out later in the rounds. Like the third round, he's gassed. You know, he's a big guy. So he doesn't have that a gas tank like Prazeris.
Gone very,
you know,
far.
And Rakhmonov, he hasn't really. I'm looking,
whoa,
at his.
Oh, wait a second,
yeah, man! A third round.
You make a good
TKO
point, Char. Hold
that's
on.
That's really about it.
Rakhmonov career wins 7 knockouts, 6 submissions, 0 decisions. How has Prazeris lost all of his fights? 3 decisions.
Wow. Maybe we have to play Prazeris.
You know what? Another thing, I've seen a lot of these prospects. More prospects, in my opinion, are losing than winning. You know, like Miguel Baeza, everyone, he's this, he's that. He loses. I mean, that's just the first guy that popped in my head. You know, now me, this guy is 39 years old. He hasn't fought in a few years, but I hear he's like a gym rat. He's one of those guys that lives in the gym.
I think
so
it's his own
like
gym.
He's on his couch eating potato chips. And then he's like, you know what? Let me start getting in shape. And, you know, let me get in shape and get back into it. So he's a gym rat. This guy's going to come fit. He's going to come ready. But it's just like this. Does Shavkat rise to the occasion? That's what we're like banking on. Yeah, he's big. Yeah, he's strong. I think he does. I think he does. I think he lives up to his hype. You know, a lot of guys I feel like haven't recently, but I think this fight goes the distance, man. That's what I see. I think this guy is gonna come in tough as nails. You know,
fight to go the distance, I mean, plus 115.
His losses were all decisions. Unless he's old, you know, his back's been hurting him. He just doesn't move the same like a Tony Ferguson, unless he comes in like that. But you know what? I don't know. You got to see weigh-ins. You know, you can't make final bets, in my opinion, until after weigh-ins. But I never usually do. The only time I really remember making a real confident pick before weigh-ins was actually months back. I bet Shavkat Rakhmonov
over Alex Oliveira.
He was like plus one, like 20, 130, and then he became a favorite, like, you know, the day of the fight, you know. And I was like, oh, I know this guy's gonna win. But I don't know much about Michael Prezeris or Michel Prezeris. I gotta really, you know, watch more of his fights. I mean, I don't know. I think yeah, Shavkat maybe, lives up
maybe
to the
one
hype.
Of those parlors.
That's my opinion.
But I think we could. I think we've taken this one about as far as we can go.
Yeah, definitely. So let's keep flying right along. We get into another. This really one I could fight. See. Yeah, I mean, given Kennedy and Zhejiakou's last fight, Danilo Marquez, he could come in here looking for some takedowns. And I think one way or another, we're going to see someone getting lit up.
Kennedy's a really good fighter, bro. I would take Danilo Marquez, you know, but I might not even bet this fight. But if I
thought it was super interesting tracking the line movement this week, because Marquez opened a pretty solid favorite at like minus 120 or something like that, and then he slides down to plus 102, and now in Zhejiakou at minus 125. I understand, like, we saw some pretty good developments as far as defensively and the stand-up. You know, in Zhejiakou has a really good chin. He has only one loss in the UFC to Paul Craig. Definitely impressive stuff. But Marquez, he's shown to be a bit of a relentless grappler. It does worry me that his nose gets busted up in like every single fight. So, like,
yeah.
And Zhejiakou could piece him up from distance. He's got a 6-inch reach advantage. And if he could stuff the takedowns, which he's shown to be able to do in the past, maybe not at the highest level outside of the Paul Craig fight, who isn't the best wrestler. But I do think he has the skills and he's been training out of Fortis. And he's got the length and he's so difficult. Like, tall guys like that are a little bit more difficult. But Marquez matches up in the height. It's just going to be the reach where he gives it up. So I'm curious, you know, you look in at like the prop market here, and I mean, if I was going to play anything, I think that, you know, this could end inside the distance, you know, very possible. But if you're going to take, like, you know, a specific play, I mean, Marquez by submission plus 260 on DraftKings, that seems like, if that was going to be the method, that's it.
Play, dude.
Yeah.
I
just
like
the fight to
distance, like,
what for Marquez, you're saying?
What about for the fight?
I mean, not to go the distance is minus 190. So I mean, that's not too interesting to me. I don't feel great about Assad. I want to see them like face off and just get an idea, like, is Marquez going to be much thicker than in Zhejiakou? Is he going to be able to overwhelm him when he goes for the double leg? And yeah, I know he's going to go for the takedowns, but will he get him?
I see an interesting prop on FanDuel, fight to start round three, pretty much kind of pick 'em. Yes, minus 126. No, minus 102. I kind of lean towards that no at minus 102. So that's pretty much an under over of two rounds. So, but it's very possible it's a slop fest where nobody gets a finish at all. Like, it becomes more of a sparring grappling match. So I don't know. It's lower level stuff. Tough to play. Shark, do you see anything?
You know, I don't know. Kennedy.
Yeah.
won his last fight because Carlos Olberg gassed out. That's it. You know, I don't know why everyone's putting this high stock in him. And to be honest, I never really seen him fight much. But that was the only time I saw him fight is when his last fight, when he beat Olberg. But I don't know. I don't even know if I'm going to bet this fight. If I had to bet right now, I would take Danilo Marquez. I think he could pull him down. He doesn't look like he's got good balance. He doesn't look like he's got this crazy takedown defense. That's my opinion.
I think we're ready for the main card.
That's all about that one.
Yeah, let's get down to moving right along to our next fight. We have Renato Moicano versus Jai Herbert to kick off the main card. This should be an exciting matchup. I don't think we have a great chin on either side of the matchup. And, you know, we could be in for a quick finish, whether it's Moicano getting a takedown and able to get in a finish. He hasn't had a knockout in his career, but Herbert's chin, his hands are down. He keeps his head out there. Is it going to be available for a highlight here? I mean, listen, we talk about levels. Could it be one of those types of fights? I mean, you look at the names that Moicano's lost to. Is Jai Herbert really going to join the ranks of those? And I know Moicano at minus 250 feels disgusting and dirty, but like it screams to me that maybe I should just pass. But like I seriously do feel strongly that Moicano's going to win. But I don't know that my heart could take placing physical money on Moicano. I don't know.
I'm actually going to put Moicano in that parlay. So I'm going to throw Moicano in there. What I saw from Jai Herbert, he is just not very good, man. That loss to Trinaldo was pretty poor. He's taken a lot of time off. He's taken nearly a year off since that loss. I don't know, actually. That's really tough. He's a young, he's actually not even that, 33. No.
I mean, he got knocked out by Reese McKee, and on his regional tape before he fought Trinaldo, I just thought, you know, the reach advantage and everything. And he did have his really good moments knocking Trinaldo down a bunch. But, like, he just leaves his hands down. He doesn't have great foot movement. And, like, his head is generally presents itself and is available. Yeah. Like, Moicano for a knockout, like, is that even, like,
and that
worth
was
a little
clearly
stab?
The best of what Trinaldo has to offer now, right? Because Trinaldo's looked terrible since that awesome knockout.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Moicano has fallen in love with being a striker at this point. It's kind of weird. And, like, Herbert, he's definitely going to be available. He's definitely going to be there to get hit. Plus 550 for Moicano, who, granted, has never gotten a knockout in his career. But it's not that he's not trying to throw his hands. And losing to Fiziev, Korean Zombie, Jose Aldo, Brian Ortega, I just don't think that Jai Herbert is, like, that type of guy. So I think Moicano can pull this off here.
So barring some good weight cuts, I'm going to put Moicano in that parlay. So you got Warley Alves and Moicano.
I agree with you. You know what? All I needed to see Jai Herbert losing to Reese McKee. You know, I mean, Moicano's been in there with the best in the world. Fiziev, one of the best probably in the world at what he does, you know.
Brian Ortega.
Been in there with? Zombie,
those are his four losses.
Though. I mean, he beat, you know. I don't think Jai Herbert's at this level. Like, if you're Moicano, what else do you want? Like, what else do you want, you know? This is perfect for him, but again, his chin.
Guys with real power.
I mean, when he's got knocked out, it was against
Zombie and Aldo.
Bizayev, who else
knocked him the fuck out?
Oh yeah,
But did Zombie knock
him out? Oh my god, bro! It was brutal. The crowd was going crazy.
Overhand right to ground. Was it? So this sounds crazy and stupid. I took Moicano when he fought Fizayev, and my boy was like, "Dude, don't do it. Fizayev is real deal." I'm like, "Nah, Fizayev.
I believe he could be hype.
What has he done? Right? You know,
TV."
But I was wrong.
Yeah, I definitely hit it pretty nicely there. I remember
we parlayed Fizayev and Marab.
I don't remember exactly. I mean, not important to be honest, because realistically, we're not talking about a striker on the level of Fiziev. And Moicano landed a few nice shots on Fiziev himself before getting finished. And like I said, I could see that knockout possibly being there +550, if not parlay out Moicano. And I'm sure there's plenty of value on the sub, but like I'm not rushing to play that, given that it's going to be a much lower price. And it sounds like we're all in agreement here. So why not get moving right along to a fight where, you know, Tim Means versus, I think, a mortal enemy of all three of us, Nicholas Dalby, or at least the judges who scored the Daniel Rodriguez versus Nicholas Dalby fight. I mean, how many dollars went down the drain between the three of us when Daniel Rodriguez gets announced, you know, as the loser to Nicholas Dalby? I did think that it was an awkward fight, but like, I didn't see how Dalby won that.
There was no way Dalby won that, and that pissed me off so much. Another one of those Bobby Green type losses that just sticks in your gullet and never leaves. It was awful. Chark, how did you feel?
I felt the same way, man. I was surprised. I really thought D-Rod won. But, you know, the judges, so a lot of times they're corrupt too, man. But I don't know if that was corruption. What I think was D-Rod was just playing the counter game. And Dalby kept moving forward and moving forward and moving forward. So, you know, some people see it that way, you know. Tim Means has hands, bro. He has hands. But I, for some reason, I think Dalby's going to be
tough to finish.
I don't think Tim Means is
finishing. His last two wins are by decision. He's a good point fighter, at least from what I've seen from Means.
That's,
he outpointed Perry and Sharapova.
But for some reason, I feel like Dalby wins a decision. I don't know why. I just have a feeling he does. I think Tim Means is a better fighter. He's got better hands. What is Dalby? He's what's his style? Karate? Yeah. I don't know, man. This is a fight to call.
It's funny to me. I'm
confident in either.
This is actually one of more confident ideas on this card. I do think I like Tim Means here. As far as like what Shark said about Rodriguez working more on the counters and working backwards, I do think Tim Means is more on the front foot. I don't think he'll allow Dalby to set up his kicking game, which I think dictated the pace and the distance in the Rodriguez fight. Dalby has definitely been hurt recently, even if not finished. But Means doesn't necessarily have, like, crazy power. It's, like, more the accumulation. So could there be a late finish? I certainly think it's possible. But I think it's safer, in my book at least, to take Tim Means and, you know, maybe we'll look to parlay him out. -137. That's really not that bad. I mean, I could even play that
straight.
I
like Tim Means by decision +180. I don't think that Dalby. Yeah, I don't think Dalby finished. And I don't think
he's never been finished. Dalby's a tough.
I think he'll be strong enough to dictate the pace. I think he'll use his length to keep Dalby frustrated. I don't think Dalby will be able to get inside and use wrestling or anything. Like, yeah, I think Tim Means should be able to cruise to another decision victory. I mean, unless I'm missing something with Dalby, but I'm definitely looking to fade him.
I want to ask you, what do you think of their build? I feel like Dalby's a stronger.
He is.
Thicker,
he's definitely more compact. Like he's more of a compact stronger guy, as opposed to Tim Means, who's a little bit more wiry.
Yeah, I mean, Dalby only given up 1 inch of reach, but he's given up 3 inches of height. Tim Means definitely knows how to use his reach, effective with the jab from distance. I do think you're right, though, if there was a way for Dalby to get it done. I mean, we're talking about his wrestling, but at like 1.45 takedowns per 15 and 33% accuracy, Tim Means 64% defense, and he actually averages one takedown himself. I trust Tim Means more. He's got two more strikes per minute at 11% more accurate, and his defense is 5% better. Give me Tim Means.
I like Tim Means here, too, by decision. He should be able to get it done, barring the freak variants that we always talk about in MMA.
You know, I think this fight goes the distance over 2.5 rounds. It's chalk. I don't even know what the lines
minus
are.
Minus 160 to go the distance.
But
minus 165.
I saw that Tim Means lost to D-Rod.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to straight up MMA math, the last person to beat Tim Means was Daniel Rodriguez, who now be just quote-unquote beat.
So a lot of people are like, oh, you can't do MMA math. You know what? Sometimes it works. Sometimes it works.
I definitely agree there's times to use it, especially when you're looking at like stylistic matchups. I think that's the most important time to use MMA math because at least it's like consistent across like stylistic matchups. But if you're just saying like X guy beat X guy and they're ranked here and he's ranked here, like that could be a little bit blind and dumb. But I definitely agree that sometimes it is very helpful. But sounds like we all agree this fight, you know, more than likely it goes the distance and there could be a late finish, but no, I definitely lean towards the decision here. Let's get to the next fight. Talk about one that's primed for a finish. I mean, Andre Feely versus Daniel Pineda. This fight, no matter what happens, I mean, we're in for a fucking show here. Andre Feely.
Definitely a night contender here for sure. Although yeah. I don't necessarily, I guess maybe with Pineda, can't really depend on him, but Feely's not much of a finisher. And he's so tough, he doesn't get finished. Like, if Sadiq Youssef couldn't finish Andre Feely, he's not getting finished. So
yeah, so my thought really is that Andre Feely has been knocked out twice in his career. One time was a round two knockout against Yair Rodriguez, which is totally, you know, you can forgive him for that. But, yeah, I mean, Max Holloway, a submission, Godfredo Pepe, a submission.
Pepe!
You know, so is it possible Pineda, who has 9 knockouts and 18 submissions and 0 decisions, could he get an early finish? Yeah, it's possible. I don't want to completely rule it out. But, like, if you want to talk about a parlayable piece, I mean, Andre Feely, he's just faced much higher level of competition. He's never been suspended by USADA. He's never had wins overturned to no contest due to drug suspensions. Andre Feely, 9 knockouts, 3 submissions, 9 decisions. I know that in the UFC, he has 6 decisions and 3 knockouts. So, you know, he is going the distance more often than not. But Daniel Pineda, he has 3 knockout losses, 6 submission losses, and 5 decision losses. And he lost his last fight by knockout in round 2 to Cub Swanson, just completely gassing out and getting boxed up on the feet. I mean, Feely's got some hands, and I don't think Pineda is going to be able to wrestle him so easily.
Man, I lost a ton of money on Daniel Pineda, but that right cross from Cub Swanson was one of the most beautiful bombs. I was so happy to see Cub win. I kind of wasn't because I lost a lot of money, but I realized right away because it was just another one of those dumb things. Why did I have so much money on Pineda to begin with? Like, that was stupid. So I felt like I learned my lesson in terms of that, but I think Feely should be able to get it done. This is a huge fight for him. He needs a win here. Every time he takes a step up in competition, he loses. Bryce Mitchell, Sadiq Youssef, Michael Johnson in 2018, Calvin Kattar in 2017, Yair Rodriguez in 2016. Every single time he takes a step up in competition, he loses. Daniel Pineda is not a step up in competition. This is classic Andre Feely winning territory. Andre Feely will round out that parlay, which would be Warley Alves, Renato Moicano, and Andre Feely at plus 196. I do like that. On this fight, I don't know. I don't know why I like Andre Feely by decision at plus 165. There's not really any money there. I kind of like my parlay better. Andre Feely by KO plus 240. Andre Feely by submission plus 1100. I mean, that's kind of crazy, right? He's more of a wrestler. Doesn't really submit anybody. Yeah.
Shark, are you feeling the same?
Yeah, you know what? We lost a lot of money on Pineda, his last fight, because we got sucked into the hype.
Well, the hype that...
That's why.
Cub was washed.
We got sucked into all this hype. Oh, this guy. Exactly. And then Pineda's, you know, previous performance, you know, that kind of tricked us. Yeah, I don't know. I don't trust Pineda. I just think he's like, I don't think he's hungry for it. That's what I get from him. I don't think he's hungry. I think Andre Feely wants this bad. He needs this. You know, I see Pineda around a lot coaching.
His coaching?
Does anyone know anything about that?
I think he's with the Four Ounce Fight Club.
A lot of other fights.
That's Derek Lewis. Like his crew.
All right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't see Pineda hungry wanting this like Andre Feely. I think Andre Feely wins a decision. You know what? I can't even
say he wins
a decision.
And I agree
because
with you.
I don't see Pineda.
You look
going
at
the
matchup here as far as size go. Feely 5'11", Pineda 5'7", and that same 4 inches of height translates over to reach. And then Pineda is 35, Feely 30. It all points in Feely's direction.
Yeah, if you look at Pineda's fights, he has not. He was in the. He got into the third round in 2016 in a Bellator.
Yeah.
You know, both of these guys have been around. You know, both of them have a lot of. They've been around, both of them. But I just think Feely wants it more, man. Yeah, Pineda, you know, I think he's going to go in there first, second. If he doesn't finish this by the second round, he's just going to gas out and Feely's going to take over. You know, that's sub prop you liked, plus 1,100. Who knows? Maybe he gasses out and Feely goes down and chokes him out. But Zombie last week against Ige, Zombie to win by sub was plus 1,100. I put a little bit on that, hoping that it was going to come in. And you know what? I found out before I put that bet in that Zombie all camp, all he was doing was training jiu-jitsu. So that's why I put that bet in. He tried a sub. He even said it in an interview after. You know, so it's just funny that line is also plus 1,100. So that makes me think it's not going to come in because that Zombie line plus 1,100.
Yeah, I totally understand.
That's the way I think.
I also kind of want to throw a second parlay in there. Because I really do like Andre Feely. I don't know. I think you can even just play Feely and Alves. Obviously, I had mentioned.
I think weigh-ins are going to be important for this fight. You know, what kind of Pineda are you going to get? I don't see him. I don't see him as a guy that really wants this, or I don't see him training hard. Do either of you guys follow him on Instagram? Have you been following his camp or anything like that?
Daniel Pineda. Why is it taking too
long? Well, while you're looking at Pineda, I am looking at Feely.
He just had a baby.
I see him looking good.
He has – last time he posted on Instagram was December 30th, so December 31st of this year. So he doesn't use Instagram.
Yeah, that's a sign for me as well. Like, why aren't you proud of what you're doing? You're active. You know, I don't trust him. I don't trust him at all. I like Feely here. I would put him in that parlay.
Yeah, that,
I like that parlay.
We're all over Feely, it sounds like. Let's get to the fight that got moved from the prelims all the way up to, you know, the third top fight of the night here. Hione Barcelos versus Timur Valiyev.
And it deserves to be where it is.
Yeah, definitely.
This is a fight of the night if I've seen one.
Listen, I love Hione Barcelos. I think he is one of the most talented fighters out there. But I am slightly confused given what Timur Valiyev was lined at in his first couple of fights. You know, like minus 300, minus 400, minus 500 type of lines. And then he comes in against Barcelos and it's plus 180. And Barcelos, I mean, he's great. He fights Khalid Taha and he's minus 300, minus 400. And Barcelos, you know, he puts on a clinic and then, you know, gasses a little bit towards the end, lets, you know, Taha make it a little bit closer late, you know, but Barcelos probably should have gotten the finish at some point there. That was a little bit concerning in the fact that I don't know that Barcelos has like the same type of stopping power, especially with not as much of a reach advantage. I mean, these guys match up as well as it gets. Valiyev and Barcelos, plus 180 for Valiyev, Barcelos minus 230. I think the line could be too wide. Not that Barcelos might not win, but I've always been partial to value of skills. What are you thinking?
Right away, I like Barcelos. I always loved him since I first found out about him. You're right. He is one of the most skilled. His hands are good. He can wrestle. His BJJ is good. Great. I mean, he's like the perfect fighter, this guy. You know, he's quick. I mean, you name it, man. His cardio's there. He's perfect. Only thing, he's getting up in age, you know, and I'm surprised that the UFC are matching these two guys together. I was surprised when I saw this. I felt like Barcelos deserved someone maybe in a top 15.
17, you know? According to Tapology.
I don't know. What is he ranked? Yeah, that's so. I'm a little surprised about this matchup that they're putting him against Timur Valiyev. I know Timur, he trains in Jersey, right? He's with Mark Henry at Nick Catone. He trains over there, you know. So sometimes I don't like going against those guys, you know. Being I'm from Jersey too. Well, we're all from New Jersey, and I know some of those guys too. And I don't want to go. I don't like going against them, but you know. But I got kids to feed. No, I'm kidding. I don't know, man. I don't know how anyone can beat Barcelos. I don't see it. I like him. I like him to win.
Yeah,
here. And I know
Kevin Jones.
He got knocked out before, right? His last fight, he looked good, but. I don't know. I think Barcelos finds holes and he stops everything Valiyev does. That's my opinion. I think Barcelos is a fucking prodigy, bro. All
right. You know? I do think he's one of those guys that should be able to get it done. I do really like Barcelos here, at least in terms of a pick, because I do think he gets it done. Martin Day is terrible. And he gassed versus Trevin Jones. So it's certainly a tough fight. It's not one that I want to play Barcelos at chalk.
You know what
I think. But I certainly want to pick him.
Listen, if Timur Valiyev's name was like Bob Jones, right? I feel like his name throws me off too. Like, ooh, this is like a sick, like a Russian guy. I don't want to bet against him, you know? So that kind of like scares me too.
Don't I mean, that's just from you. What I've seen on the tape, honestly. And from what I've seen on the tape, he can gas out and his chin was suspect in that fight. I mean, he got clipped with a beautiful shot. But what I saw from Ronnie Barcelos is that it's going to be time to fade Barcelos at some point soon. He's been a huge favorite in most of his fights. I think all of his fights in the UFC. And he was pretty hittable versus Taha. He was like a minus 300 versus Taha. I came out of that fight, obviously it was a fantastic fight, one I'd loved rewatching. But I actually came away with like a little bit of a respect for Taha, that he's actually like not as trash. Like I'm interested to see who he'd be matched up against, because I almost would be looking to play him, because I thought he fought decently against a savage in Barcelos. The body lock takedown in that first round Barcelos landed on with Taha, I mean, I just think that he's going to take advantage of Teamer here. I think it's going to, you know, be close in the striking, and I think that Barcelos will push the pace in the grappling, and we've seen when you push the pace against Teamer, or actually Teamer pushed the pace in gas, but I guess it's the same idea. The pace gets pushed and Teamer can't sustain. So weigh-ins, definitely interested to see it, especially at 34 and 31 years old. I think it could be one of those chalk fights that ends up Barcelos could just kind of get it done. I am looking for the spot to fade Barcelos. I just don't think that this is it. And I do think that after he wins this fight, it will be time for a top 15. Honestly, I could straight up say if Valiev wins this fight too, he'll probably get it's very possible he gets a top 15 shot as well.
Yeah, but I definitely agree with that sentiment. What I think is that if you are going to bet Valiev, which like I'm considering, I think you really have to be realistic with yourself, because like I don't see Valiev really getting a finish here. I think the way it happens is stuffing takedowns and point fighting from the outside. I do like Valiev striking. I do like his distance management. I like his kicks. I like his arsenal. The things that worry me are Valiev getting finished himself or Barcelos just putting on a great performance. I mean, he is incredible. There's nothing against that. And I don't want to like proclaim that like Valiev is like clearly the better fighter. I just think that it's interesting to see two guys that have both recently been like minus 400 and you put them against each other and it's spread to like minus 230 for Barcelos. That's fair. He could definitely come out here and make me look stupid. I might put something small in the Valiev by decision at like plus 340, because that's the only way Valiev wins to me. So that's not actually plus 325. It's not an official play yet. I want to see how they look facing off, make sure the guys have good cuts on a fight that's going to, like, in my mind, should be a little bit closer. And, I'm not convinced he wins, so it's like I want to look more towards a prop.
Yeah, I was going to say that, I mean, the Vegas thinks that this fight goes the distance at minus 190. So I think whichever way you like your fight, or bet them to go the distance. Shark?
I think this line should be closer. You're right. I think the line should be a little closer. You know, I think it is a little, it's not that bad, plus 180. I would say maybe 140 to like 177, something like that, or 190 to 145, you know. I think the line is a little spread out. I'm really like, really thinking now who Barcelos did beat. Yeah, he looked great, but who was it against? You know?
Yeah.
You know, maybe I am hyping him up too much. But, you know, I like that Valiev by decision prop. I feel like that is a good one. Plus 300, whatever it was, for sure. You know, especially with the judges, man. Like, Barcelos isn't getting any love. You know, what if it does go to a somewhat of a close decision? Maybe Valiev gets it, you know? And he was beating, was
100%.
I can't remember the fight too well. He was beating Trevin Jones before he got knocked out, correct? Yeah, he was beating his ass before he got knocked out. It was like the second round he came in.
It was interesting, though, because like
got hurt. How?
I don't think it was the traditional type of gas out. Oh, like he had this guy up on the fence, nearly finished to the body, to the head. And then Jones gets one of those last second takedowns, desperation, end of the first round. Ride it out. Then he comes back and it's like, you know what? I mean, he was playing with his food, Valiev. He had a finish in his hands. He played with his food and got caught with a check hook with a guy who had a 3-inch reach advantage. They have the same reach in this fight. It doesn't land as powerful when the guy's not longer than you. I think Valiev's chin will be a little bit safer here. It was definitely, you know, concerning to see that he has that off button readily available, but I think slightly different. Listen, Trevin Jones was on the weed that fight, so he had some extra powers, okay? That's why he got the knockout.
Yeah, declared a no contest because that was a performance-enhancing drug. Can't be smoking the weed and knocking people out. Oh, yeah.
You know, Trevin Jones is on a win streak, too. Two fights, but he's doing his thing.
Both of them.
Yeah.
He was an underdog, right, against Bautista.
Yep.
Everyone took Bautista that fight. I remember him. Everyone. Mm-hmm. Crazy. But this is going to be a good fight. This is going to be a really, really good fight. And I think this fight, we'll see what, you know, Barcelos is really made of. Because, you know, like, I'm really big on this guy. And I was big on a lot of people. Like, I remember there was a boxer. Keith Thurman, right? You know who Keith Thurman is.
I mean, like, Lomachenko and Thurman? Alvarez and Triple G, but, like, that's about it.
Oh, really? So Keith Thurman was knocking people out, beating the shit out of people, ending fights, knocking everyone out. He was, like, 26-0. I'm like, whoa. He called out Mayweather one fight. Anyway, he looked amazing against these guys. I was like, Keith Thurman's going to be a world champion, no doubt. And then once he got to the higher levels, man, the show was a little different, you know, in changes. So we'll see what Barcelos is really made of. Maybe, I don't know, maybe we shouldn't, you know, we shouldn't trust him so much like we trust him. Like, everyone was all big on Dan Ige, right? Oh, this guy, he's, you know, on his win streak knocking people out. But who was it against? Once he got tested,
that's the question.
You know, he got to the big leagues, different. But his ballet of the big leagues.
Same exact odds as Andre Feely. And I put Andre Feely in the parlay and not Barcelos. And this is why.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. You know, you can't put everyone in the parlay. Oh, yeah.
Once you hit four people, they're
hard to hit.
Let alone two, three, four.
Yeah, let's get on to our co-main event. One that was put together last second, short notice. Tanner Boser hanging out in quarantine.
We have a very pissed off Canadian.
I mean, listen, his OSP plus 150 against Tanner Boser minus 178 coming in on short notice. I mean, wow. This is super interesting to me because, listen, Tanner Boser, I mean, listening to James Lynch. Yeah, and Tanner Boser, I mean, he's been stuck in quarantine ever since his fight. He gets to the hotel. He's stuck there. He can't leave. He's not training. He's doing push-ups. He's got, you know, a couple dumbbells. But, like, you know, he's basically just, like, pissed off stewing in his loss to Latifi, where, like, honestly, I mean, that fight could have been called finished in the second round off of that, like, knuckle punch to the eye. Yeah, I mean, like, he landed like that little, like, you know, knuckle to the eye.
He punched him in the eye. Nothing illegal about getting punched in the eye. He punched him in the eye.
And so you see Latifi, like, turn away, fall over, and I'm like, how did Herb not call this? And, like, Herb's, like, standing there, like, oh, you know, like,
the follow-up shots, unfortunately, didn't connect. Unfortunately for Boser, all of his follow-up ground and pound shots didn't connect at all because of Latifi's giant fucking arms covering his face. But it was really weird watching it in kind of, I wouldn't say real time, but kind of watching it over and, like, really hyper-analyzing it, because it was like the way Latifi buckled over, you would have thought that maybe he could have got the stoppage there. But again, like I said, I think he covered up well and then respond. And then again, you saw 30 seconds later, Latifi was on top. So it was really poor grappling from Boser, but we knew that was the problem for him going in. I picked Latifi last week or last month, but didn't bet him because I wasn't confident. And obviously, as that fight went, I'm kind of glad. I would have been sweating the whole time. But I don't think OSP wins this fight because he's really shit at heavyweight. Like, and this is a heavyweight fight. We saw him at heavyweight versus Ben Rothwell. I guess that fight was kind of closer than it should have been, too. That was a weird fight.
Yeah, okay. My argument to that is that I did see OSP saying that, like, he came in at 240 last time and felt way too heavy. He was preparing for a while for a heavyweight fight that time, it seemed. This time it's on a week notice. He's been preparing for light heavyweight to make a cut. Now he's saying he wants to come in around like 230 so that he can move a little bit better. My question is, though, like, he's not going to move better than Tanner Boser, you know, the guy who's 9 years younger. However, Boser's given up a little bit of reach here. So if OSP is able to get him in the clinch, it's game over to me. Because, like, he's not Ilir Latifi that, like, just sits on people. It's about, like, finding that Von Flew or that Von Prue choke at this point.
But OSP can't really wrestle.
That's right. So I don't see him having the same success that Latifi did.
Bozer's just going to stick and move. You know, yeah, Bozer would use his speed and his leg work. I mean, his footwork is pretty decent. You know, he likes to circle. He likes to frustrate people. He likes to use leg kicks.
Yeah, but you know what I get reminded of is Andrei Arlovsky. And it's like, I'm not ready to lay chalk on Tanner Boser when a couple times now when he's faced a guy that's bigger with bigger power, he's been a little more tentative to throw his hands and he'll throw kicks instead. And it's just not landing the same type of way. And, you know, it makes me worried. Like, does OSP come away with like a really sketchy decision? Like this fight, as compared to the main event, man, I don't feel so great about this one. So, you know, begrudgingly, I take Boser, but I'm not rushing to place a ticket on it. 100,000%. I want to see that hit face off.
100,000%. Couldn't agree more.
Shark, I mean, are you feeling strongly?
I don't feel strong about this fight. I like OSP. I'm a fan, but I just feel like he's not hungry, man. Especially, you know, what I saw against Jamal Hill. I thought he was going to beat Jamal Hill. I took OSP to beat Jamal Hill. I feel like, and everyone was so big on Jamal Hill. And I'm like, why? I just don't get it. And I never understood why. And then Paul Craig showed why you should not be, you know, be so sold on Jamal Hill. I didn't get it. And so I do like OSP. I just felt like that fight, he just came out for a paycheck. You know, he missed weight that fight. Him going up to heavyweight, is that the answer? I don't know, man. I think Tanner Boser is hungrier. He wants it more. You know, I'm looking at OSP's Instagram right now, and I don't know, man. I'm just looking at him, just fishing around. I'm not sold on him. So this fight, I might just stay away from this fight. Maybe it doesn't go the distance.
That's totally fair.
I don't see OSP going the distance.
Take something from what you said there. No, you're good. I think it was interesting how you said that, like, OSP might be there for a check. And like, 100%. To add to your point, this is a guy that was preparing for a light heavyweight fight, and on a week's notice, because his opponent falls out, he's agreeing to fight a full, like, not a full size heavyweight, but like, fighting a completely different, like, heavyweight to light heavyweight is a huge difference. And on a week's notice, like, I think this guy needs to get in there and fight.
Like, and he's it is about a check. Like, he sees I wouldn't say negligible. We wouldn't say negligible. To us, he sees some sort of negligible difference in taking this short notice fight up a weight class because he wants the check when he wants it, right? He's scheduled for a payday, so he wants it. So, yeah, and we know that he's not afraid to lose some damn fights at 25 and 15. So, and I don't think that he's in danger of getting cut if he loses because he's kind of doing the UFC a favor. So, Boser, I don't even think they're going to cut if he loses unless it's a horrible, horrible performance. I don't think so.
They just renewed Boser's contract. Yeah, they did.
I thought even he said that this was the last fight on his contract.
He said it in an interview. Even though he lost
my papers, they, and that's why he got the short notice fight for OSP.
It was his last fight. It was his last fight, and then after they renewed him for another 4-fight contract. But UFC can cut you anytime. Yeah, they just renewed it. It was in his interview that he did yesterday. Yeah. But I think he's hungry. He's saying he's like, I'm still in shape. You know, I felt like that fight was a good, I don't want to call it a tune-up, but it was a good session for him. You know, OSP hasn't been in there since, you know, Jamal Hill. He's due for a fight, and he didn't do shit that fight. He just laid down, let the guy pump. He didn't even go for a takedown. You know, 38 years old. There comes a time when you're like, all right, I need to make money, you know? Once you get that certain age, money is very, very important, you know? So that's why I think he's just there for he's there to get yeah. paid. And like you said, oh, he just agreed to the heavyweight. Oh, yeah, I'll take it. I don't give a – well, I'll take it. That's fine. Just, you know, I want to go in there. I want this fight to happen. I want to make my money.
He needs a paycheck. You know, I don't think he's going to win. I like Bozer. I'm picking Bozer. I don't know that I want to bet my house on Bozer, but I'm taking him.
This is hard because Bozer has never rose to the occasion.
Yeah, you know, Bozer should be the pick
they
here,
give
but
him
we don't really
good
trust
opponent,
him too much.
He just
I mean,
cannot
listen,
do it.
I think what we can all agree on is that for this main event here, boys, I think we got an agreement, and I think we got a play of the day. So why waste any more time? Man, talk about an exciting matchup. Ciryl Gane versus Alexander Volkov.
Title shot eliminator.
Right? Is that not what we're looking at? Because 100%. I don't know what Bones is doing. And Derek Liu is going to get that next shot. Does Stipe get another shot? Or does Stipe fight winner of this one? Or
I'd like to see the winner of this call out Bones or for the title.
Yeah, so.
Or even Stipe, whatever. I'd like to see some big call out. I agree.
Stipe deserves another shot for sure. He does, but it's not a big seller. People want to see Derek Lewis. People want to
see.
They're
tired of him.
Jones.
I want to see Stipe,
no one wants like.
But people are
know,
tired.
No one wants to see Stipe. Yeah, we. But like you know, the guy
twice
at work
here.
That watches you know UFC. You know when McGregor, they want to see you know John Jones. They want to see Derek Lewis. You know they don't want to see Stipe. You know. It's just not a big seller, but I agree with you guys. I like Volkov, man.
I shouldn't have done it with Rozenstruik. That was the worst fight ever. But yeah, I do. I like Volkov here. He's the more veteran striker. He's a more veteran MMA fighter. He's going to be taller, longer. He's fought the higher level of competition. We're getting him at dog odds. I watch him switch stances. I watch him know when to lightly pepper his shots. I've seen him know when he needs to sit down on his shots and put more power into them. I've watched him weather through adversity in the Fabricio Radum fight. I've seen everything I need to see out of Alexander Volkov. The one thing that he really, truly lacks, and he jokes about it in his interview this week, is the wrestling. You know, he can't fight the elite wrestlers. Curtis Blaydes is going to take him down. Fabricio Radum took him down 3 to 6 times, whatever it was in that fight. His takedown defense kind of lacks. But Ciryl Gane is not a wrestler. And he's not even really, he's not a knockout artist. You know, knocking out JDS doesn't make you a knockout artist. And his submission game is good, but I don't know that he's like a wizard. He's not Ryan Hall. He's not Fabricio Radum on the ground, who we saw could not submit Alexander Volkov. So Gon's a point fighter now? He's going to outpoint Volkov? I don't know. I don't think so. So that's why I'm willing to I guess die on this hill. I like Volkov for all the reasons I said, and I get him at dog odds. Let's roll.
Yeah, man. Let's dive right into the matchup. I mean, these guys, they size up well. Ciryl Gane has been the biggest guy in the matchup in every fight he's had so far. In this fight, he's 3 inches shorter than Volkov, and sure, Gane has a 1-inch reach advantage, but that's a lot less than what he's used to. Their striking stats are very similar. I mean, Volkov has a 5% advantage against tougher competition. However, Ciryl Gane's defense at 69% is what really stands out, whereas Volkov is at 56%. But Gon has not had to face a technical striker like Volkov before. I think the biggest difference.
He strikes first Rozenstruik. He threw him from the parking lot. Yeah, Volkov puts pressure. He's going to put pressure on Ciryl Gane that he's never experienced before. He's going to be in his face. And I think Gane's only way to win is maybe clinching, like a dirty fight. That's the only way I see him Gane winning. And you said like he's not a wrestler,
an opportunistic
right?
grappler against people that are worse.
Yeah, that, I mean, look,
so
8-0
statistics through his
against 33
few fights that he has, he averages 1.13 takedowns per 15 minutes, and he has a 26% takedown accuracy.
And that's against low-level competition, man. Like, so people that are saying, like, Gon can fall back on his wrestling in this fight, I think that's a little misguided. I mean, you look at Volkov's stats, it's like, I understand, like, you know, 66% takedown defense is not great. But when you go to look at the Curtis Blaydes fight, I mean, nobody is on the same type of level that Curtis Blaydes is as far as like committing to your wrestling. And he landed 14 out of 25 takedowns at 56%. That'll bring down your takedown defense every single fucking day of the week, man. And listen, like Ciryl Gane, he's a pretty solid grappler. Opportunistic in getting his takedowns as far as dealing with smaller guys and being able to get them off balance and dragging them down. But, like, man, he didn't look that great doing it against Rozenstruik. And Rozenstruik, like, he's not that great at takedown defense. Overeem got him down. Yeah, so to me, Volkov, he showed a lot of improvement as the fight went on against Blaydes, working in the clinch from guard. He was landing the elbows from bottom that, like, I mean, he ended up winning a round, right? He ended up having Blaydes breathing, looking like he was about to pass out in the post-fight interview. I mean, Volkov wasn't the one looking like that by the end of the fight. He just got controlled for a shit ton of time. I mean, so realistically, we're saying that Ciryl Gane is going to win a decision if he's going to win. But, man, I don't necessarily think that you can feel comfortable that, like, Volkov, I mean, he landed 121 strikes against Derek Lewis. And he landed 135 against Struve, 122 against Roy Nelson. You know, he could come with the output, 86 against Greg Hardy. Most recently, you know, he knocks out Walt Harris in the second round, lands 45 strikes. He knocks out Overeem in the second round, lands 54 strikes. I mean, this guy is a volume machine. I don't think it's going to be so easy for Gon to outpoint when the biggest thing that makes me want to fade Gon is not that he's uber talented and everyone loves him. It's that he keeps his hands low. He doesn't throw his hands enough, and he's relying on kicks and movement against people that don't know how to fight in the heavyweight division. Alexander Volkov is experienced. He knows how to fight. I realistically, like, I wanted to play Fight Goes the Distance, but
it's going the distance.
Yeah, but Volkov, I mean, he's one of the only guys I've seen actually able to figure out the shell game of Alistair Overeem. The precision, being able to walk him down. I know we're talking about like retirement Overeem and all that, but he's just intelligent. So I've never seen Gon in trouble before. I've never seen what it looks like when he has to respond to adversity. I mean, he's someone that's never been knocked out, never been finished, all this stuff. And he has all this Muay Thai experience and kickboxing. And man, I just give me Alexander Volkov as an underdog. I'm throwing, you know, I know to Shark, this doesn't sound like much, but I'm at least throwing 100 on it. That's it.
That's some good money.
I like that. You know what? This is the facts of the matter.
Heavyweight.
Middleweight division is stacked. Featherweight. No, I'm just saying. Middleweight division is stacked. Featherweight division is stacked. A lot of divisions are stacked. Right. I could keep going on. You know, there's just a lot of stacked divisions. The heavyweight division is not stacked. And Ciryl Gane is not ready for this, but the UFC is just pushing him. Yeah, he's a good fighter. He's athletic. He's really good. He looks great. He could sell a fight, you know. But for him at this point, 8-0 to be headlining, yeah, he beat Rozenstruik, but I feel like Rozenstruik was just like fighting scared. You know, he was just like his last fight when he fought Sakai. You know, he was a totally different person as far as his confidence. And, you know, he was a totally different fighter. I just think that the heavyweight division is not stacked, and UFC is just pushing him too quick and giving him a matchup that he has no business being in. You know, I'm looking at the rankings right now. Like, here's the, you know, you got Alexei Oleinik ranked 12, Chris Daukaus ranked 10, Augusto Sakai 8. Like, I don't know. It is Tai Tuivasa 16, Andre Arlovski 17. Like, this is not Latifi 20. If you go to like the featherweights or, you know, middleweights or welterweights even, you'll see guys ranked 17, 18 right. That you're like, yo, this guy can beat a top 10 guy, you know, like, oh, like Ilya Topuria ranked like maybe 22. You're like, Ilya Topuria, you know, I think he could do well against the top 10 guy. Like, so my point is that the heavyweight division's not stacked like other divisions, and Sarah Gunn, agree, Shark. I think he's not ready.
Sounds
for
like
this.
Guru completely agrees. I mean, do you have any other specific prop plays on this one before we wrap it up?
I have a couple thoughts. I really like if your book offers this. I know PointsBet does. Shout out PointsBet. I really like Alexander Volkov and the over 2.5 at plus 225. That's crazy. That's big money to me. FanDuel has Volkov by points plus 550. That's absurd. I know we haven't necessarily talked about this on the pod, but we talk about it between us three about, you know, sometimes fading their odds boost. FanDuel has an odds boost that this fight ends by KO. We don't think that this fight's going to end by submission. So this fight ending by KO, while it's heavyweights, the line is set at 4.5. So they're offering a boost in the KO. Maybe the KO happens, but we don't really think that it does. So I think it's a tentative fight, and I do think it goes the distance. So I do like betting this fight to go to the distance at plus 106 if you're struggling to pick a side. And I do. I really like Volkov here. Volkov's going to get it done. So any which way you want to slice up Volkov, I like. You, honestly, this is weird too. They got Volkov plus 138 on FanDuel, but you can get him double chance, KO or decision, at plus 145. So you're getting another, whatever it is, 7 cents of value there. But
listen, man, those are some great prop ideas. I think that just about wraps it up. I mean, our strongest play this time is on the main event. How do you like it? I mean, we're going to be throwing down big on this one. We got a few other plays. Hey, Shark, the most solid about that you ended up on? Just to wrap us up, quick recap for the listeners that made it this far. What are your top couple plays?
Your final thoughts.
All right, so my stronger plays right now. Now, keep in mind, we didn't see weigh-ins yet or any of that stuff, and I'm one of those that change my mind often. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not. So let me just go through real quick. I do like Worley Alves a lot. I like him a lot. Rachmanov, I like him a lot. I want to like him a lot. Something bothers, but I'm going to go with him. I'm going to stick with him. I like Moicano a lot. Alves, Moicano, Rachmanov. Who else do we got here? I do like Andre Fili as well. I like Barcelos, and I do like Volkov. I really have to sit down and really think hard of like my 2-3 strongest ones, what I'm going to really lay the chalk on.
All right, so yeah, and to I like close that it off here, I
Stoliarenko.
You know, the plays that I felt the strongest about on this card, you know, straight from the top.
James, that was your best bet, right?
So our best bet here, I had Alexander Volkov going to be throwing nicely on that. Guru came up with a great prop idea. Stay tuned. I might be doing Timur Valiyev decision prop, keeping it small there. My big parlay as far as favorites go will be Tim Means and Andre Feely together. If you're feeling saucy, throw in Renato Moicano. And finally, as far as a couple long shot underdogs that I might play props on, Ike Villanueva and Justin Jane stand out to me. And Guru, take us away.
Yeah, I said a bunch of things tonight, so it's hard to remember all of them. I really like Volkov and all the different ways you can slice him up. That's probably my favorite bet of the night, whether the fight's going the distance, whether it's Volkov decision, whether it's Volkov over 2.5. Volkov over 2.5 is probably my favorite.
That was my favorite.
That's probably my favorite.
I might have to put like 200 on there.
Yeah, I really might drop a deuce on that one. The deuce. And over 2.5 rounds.
At plus 225. Plus 225. Yeah, I mean, that's great. Anything else, Guru?
There was a bunch of things, right? I had the parlay, Andre Feely, Renato Moicano and Warley Alves. I mean, Moicano is probably the one I would phase in and out. And then from there, you could probably phase in and out Charles Rosa. Rockman Oliver, Charles Rosa. There wasn't a lot, right? We kind of maybe thought Danilo Marquez a little bit. But and then Tim Means. I like Tim Means by decision. I thought that was a pretty decent play. There was nothing you and I were different really on TB, right? Except for maybe.
I was thinking maybe Jane's. So that was one thing.
Like the only one. So I'll happily die on the side of Charles Rosa for fading Justin Jane's.
Chart? Yes. You know what I like for some weird reason, and I don't know why. I told someone this today and they go, why? And I couldn't come up with a reason why, but I like Dalby winning. I don't know why. I just have a feeling. I just see him winning at the end for some reason. And my boy asked me why and how, and I couldn't come up with a reason. And I was like, starting to come up with some bullshit.
Esteemed guest, thank you so much for joining us at UFC Shark on Instagram. It is nowhere else. It's not Twitter. It's not Facebook. It's not MySpace. It's just Instagram and it's just UFC Shark. Thanks so much for joining us, pal. Of course, thank really you happy to have
guys.
You
guys. I appreciate
get
it.
Together
man.
To watch the fight night.
It up with you.
Thank you so much for listening to us. This was a pretty extended version of UFC Vegas 30. You can follow us at Chronic Combat Conversations on YouTube. And on Instagram, you can follow us at Chronic Combat on Twitter. Please look for us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Or if there's somewhere else where you get your podcasts and we're not on, please hit us up and we'll get on there. While you're sharing, liking, and subscribing, feel free to give us a 5-star rating as well. You can follow my awesome co-host at TB Scouting MMA on Instagram, Twitter, Verdict, and Tapology. And you can follow me, the_MMA Guru at Instagram, Twitter, Verdict, and Tapology. We may have some big changes on the horizon, so stay tuned. And if you listen this long, I guess I'll give you a sneak peek. UFC 264, we have the one and only, we have Clint from the Die Hard MMA podcast. And man, I could not be more excited to have him on. He is somebody in this business that I've certainly looked up to, in terms of just being like an awesome guy that is just really good to the fans. And I don't know, I just really can't wait to have him on. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. We have a week off next week, so we'll miss you.